Thank you for downloading the Best of the Indian Startup Show Part 5. So today you're going to hear from Daniel Becerra. He's the co-founder and CEO of Buffalo Grid. Buffalo Grid uses solar energy to provide mobile power and internet services to off-grid communities around the world. Next up is Shamatel Aftek Itam. She is the founder and CEO of 3 Million Club. 3 Million Club is the Amazon.com for life-saving products for the humanitarian sector. Next, we hear from Vidya Vilar. She's the founder and CEO of Evidesk. Evidesk is a software as a service product providing help desk software solutions for businesses around the world. Next up is Deepak Goel. He is the founder of Karma Circles. Karma Circles is a peer-to-peer social learning platform. And finally, Vivek Pradji. He's the founder of Credent Academy. Credent Academy is one of the foremost professional training institutes in India, with a focus on finance and capital markets. So sit back and enjoy some of the best bits. Thank you. Hello, Daniel. Thanks for coming on the show today. Much appreciated.
You're very welcome, Neil. Thanks.
Brilliant. Tell me a little about Buffalo Grid, please. Sounds interesting.
Thank you. Well, mobile phone is the most successful electronic device in history, and is the one and only that has been able to reach the most remote and low-income regions of the world. And there's hundreds of millions of people today with access to a mobile phone, but not access to the power to charge it.
Okay.
So addressing that pain, we create Buffalo Grid. We deployed our Buffalo Grid hubs that are, I mean, as a size reference, a little bit like a shoebox connected to a solar panel.
Okay.
The solar panel generates the electricity that we store in a battery in the hub. And then we dispense the power to charge mobile phones through it. And the customer comes along, sends a text message, and that text message is the key and payment to unlock the power within your hub. Now, one of the key things about Buffalo Grid is that we provide this equipment for free.
Okay, it's free. Okay, excellent.
As one of the things that we identified when we were looking into this market is that the cost barrier is one of the biggest obstacles to scale. So we reduce that barrier to zero. We provide our equipment for free, as I was telling you, and then we run the service of providing the power and connectivity to these rural users with the agents that run our hubs. We share that revenue with them. And because everybody's paying by text message, there's no cash involved. So all the transactions are completely accountable and transparent. Again, the agent cannot even access the power within your hub. It's only the text message that is the key and payment to unlock that power. So that allows us to keep control remotely from our headquarters in London across all our operations in rural India.
Excellent. So you're running this like a proper business. It's not like an NGO, is it?
Exactly. So that was the other key thing. What we saw is that in order to scale, you need to have a business approach to it. If you see the energy hungry problem, then you will see that more than 1 billion people are out without access to power, and solar technology has been available for a couple of decades in these markets. And if you put all the companies that are using solar power to try to address these energy hungry problems, they don't even address 5% of the market. On the other hand, you have mobile phones. Then within 15 years in these regions, they were able to reach 2/3 of that 1.2 billion people. So 750 million people have access to a mobile phone with no access to power. And they did it with very simple business model, which is they set up the infrastructure and they run an affordable, reliable, convenient service that everybody wants and needs.
Excellent.
So that's the same approach for us.
Excellent. So let's talk about the early days then. Where did the actual original idea come from?
Right. So the original idea came from my co-founder, Phil Schluter. He is a coffee trader. He is the head of a company that has been doing coffee trading in sub-Saharan Africa for more than 150 years.
Oh, wow.
And he's the sixth generation to run it. He grew up in Kenya, so he's always been very close to these regions. And nowadays, he's based in the UK, but constantly traveling to these more than 13 nations where he buys coffee from across sub-Saharan Africa, and checking the coffee and all that sort of stuff. And in that process, he saw how mobile phones were increasing their penetration, how many of the farmers that he would buy coffee from were getting access to mobile phones, how much benefits the mobile phones would bring to them, but how difficult it was for them to charge it. So it's very common to see a farmer in Uganda commuting a couple of hours to reach the nearest point where he can charge his phone. So he thought of a bicycle generator.
Okay.
And that bicycle generator was prototyped by a friend of mine. And, well, so we cross our paths, Phil, my friend, and I, one day, and they introduced me to these bikes. At that stage, I was employed to take to test those bicycles in Uganda and Ghana.
Okay.
So we test the bicycles, and I took them to Uganda, where I firsthand witnessed the massive need for off-grid power, but how the bicycles were just not the right product.
Right.
And well, since that was in 2013, and since then we've been developing our technologies and our approach to leave the bike behind and now have this internet-enabled solar power hub and business model.
Excellent. So you mentioned scale before. I mean, can you share some stats? I mean, how many countries are you in and how many communities are using this at the moment?
We're still on a development stage. All the units that are out there are prototypes, but that's something that we are addressing at the moment. And we are designing our hubs for mass production. So we are in 25 villages across India. But with those 25 hubs, we already serving around 30,000 customers.
Wow.
And have served thousands of charges already, tens of thousands of charges. So yeah, the plan is to reach production by the end of the year and deployed in larger numbers from Q4.
Excellent. So who actually manufactures the devices then? Where are they getting made? Is it London?
So yeah, at the moment we are designing them in the UK and with local manufacturers, but we envisage the production most likely in India, because as our main market is in India, having a short supply chain is key for us.
Excellent. You seem quite busy. I mean, what are you working on right now?
The product development of these hubs towards production. My background is in industrial design, so this is something that I really enjoy, working with the team in designing the new hubs. We just closed a round of funding, which, as you can imagine, has a lot of things to arrange, from updating company's house to updating investors and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, well, we're gearing up towards larger deployments. And yeah, I mean, most of the team now is very busy in gearing up towards scale.
Excellent. So you say you got funding. I mean, why do you think you got funding? Because obviously a lot of companies don't get funding.
Well, I think we tick a lot of boxes. We have a compelling story. We have a market that it's been now growing. I mean, for many years, these emerging economies were not seen as an attractive market. It gets confusing because at the moment we're in India, which is a very powerful economy. But when we started, we kick off with sub-Saharan nations in mind. And so that's where I'm referring to the market not being very attractive in the past. But the whole industry is changing and there's a lot of money going in these social impact companies that are addressing more, well, bigger issues than just profitability. So I had the opportunity a few years back to present the project in one of the conferences with the UN.
Oh, yeah.
And I was sitting alongside the guys from Google that we're presenting about their initiatives about internet connectivity for these regions. And the bottom line of that conference was that if you provide power and connectivity to these regions, you can really start thinking of eradicating poverty in the next couple of decades.
Excellent.
Mobile phones are already the biggest contributor to economic growth in these regions. Imagine what smartphones can do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you share some like milestones or achievements or during your time at Buffalo Grid, what's been the highlight so far?
When we charged the first 1,000 phones, was quite an exciting time. We've been breaking that record constantly. Nowadays, even day on a daily basis, we can do more than 1,000 charges now. Having the unit that it's serving working in the way that we want it to work.
Yeah.
It's been a constant design development stage. So from a bicycle generator to a unit that only had a few ports to the units that we have now that have more than 24 ports and internet connectivity. It's just been constant development. So whenever we hit a milestone, then yeah, there's a milestone ahead of us waiting to be in a reach.
Excellent. You said you went to Uganda. I mean, I've not been. What's it like? Any stories you can tell us?
Well, one of the things about these nations that grow coffee is that they're in the equatorial fringe of the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
By definition, it is very good weather in these regions.
Yeah.
So things grow. So when you go to the countryside of Uganda, the subsistence farmers that live there have a really rich soil workaround. So they can grow their coffee, they can grow their vegetables, they can take care of their livestock. And you realize that it's a good place to live if things were different from where they are now.
Yeah.
The big issue that these people have is the lack of services. The moment that their kids get sick, the moment that their kids cannot reach the proper education, is when things go really pear-shaped for these communities. So if that's something that can be addressed with technology, then I dare to say that the future is really bright.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment that you can, I mean, that's one of the things we're doing with Buffalo Grid. Having that internet connectivity allows us to become a platform for many more services to reach these communities.
Mm-hmm.
And those services can take any shape or form. We're working with companies doing remote medical diagnosis. We're doing projects with companies doing interactive educational content.
Mm-hmm.
Things that can be deployed in these remote regions simply by providing power and connectivity.
Mm-hmm. How are you getting the word out? I mean, is it via online, social media, email marketing? Is it word of mouth?
Yes, I guess a bit of everything.
Mm.
Doing podcasts like yours, presenting at events. We've been really lucky with trade missions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In the UK, there's this group called Clean and Cool.
Mm-hmm.
We've been traveling with them to India, to the US, to Brazil. And it's a network of companies in the clean tech industry that we've been traveling together and created. I mean, you join the voices, the message is louder.
Mm-hmm.
So through those platforms, we've been really lucky with press and with general coverage.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned some countries there with big populations. I mean, how big do you want to go with this?
There's more than 170 nations that will be benefit from Buffalo Grid services.
Mm-hmm.
We are now fully dedicated to scale in India, but we want to reach as many sub-Saharan African nations as we can, and the same for Southeast Asia.
Yep.
So, I guess if we could reach those 170 nations, that would be a massive goal to hit. But at least we want to be... one of the key things that we want to prove is the universality of the service.
Mm-hmm.
Prove that the same service, the same product, the same technology works in India as it works in Kenya, as it works in Haiti.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So you said the devices are free. So if anyone in India is listening to this, how do they get hold of one?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. So obviously, because they're free, we cannot give them to anyone that comes along. So we are building partnerships with companies, organizations, or individuals that have reach to those populations where Buffalo Grid could be useful. Mm-hmm. So in India, we partner up with bank and inclusion companies that have a presence in those communities. We partner up directly with new operators that have presence in those regions. So it's by exploiting those existing networks of trust that we can deploy our free equipment.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. What would you say is the most surprising thing about this entrepreneurial journey so far?
Most surprising thing. Well, it's the success, or the overall success of mobile phones. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we started, people didn't believe that mobile phones have such big penetration in such poorer regions. Mm-hmm. Now that we are, again, in a different economy like it is in India, people find hard to believe that so many users will have smartphones. Mm-hmm. It's just a constant surprise of seeing the success that mobile phones are. Mm-hmm. So almost half of our customers already have a smartphone in India, and we hope that's going to be the case soon enough in sub-Saharan Africa as well.
Excellent. What would you say is the hardest part about building this business?
Well, I guess it's finding the right partnerships, because it's about finding the right people that you can scale with, and just getting the right deals and the right setups from the outset.
Cool. What would you say is the vision of the company?
Well, the vision is to transform the lives of those who don't have access to power. And with that in mind, it's reaching the 1.2 billion people without access to power.
Excellent. Last few questions then. Have you got any advice for anyone wanting to do like a social innovation startup? You know, what should they be focusing on, in your opinion?
I guess for us, what has been always very useful is to see the big picture. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to focus on the daily tasks. Of course, you have to get those done, but it's the big picture that is the light at the end of the tunnel, right? So if you see this entrepreneurship as a big tunnel, mm-hmm. a lot of time, if you just focus on the road ahead, it's just going to be darkness. So you need to raise your head high and see the light for that vision at the end to find a way through it.
Excellent. Can you give me some examples of how Buffalo Grid has changed, you know, rural communities, please?
Well, one of the key things for us is to enable the full potential of those mobile phones. Mm-hmm. So most of our users use their mobile phones on a daily basis like you do when you have 10% left in your battery. Mm-hmm. For that call that you really need to make, for that call that you really expect. Having the convenient access to power that allows you to have your phone charge 100% every day allows you to use it more and to connect more. Mm-hmm. So those rural users that were just using that phone to the bare minimum now can use it much more. Yep. And talk to their families, increase their business activities, and now that those that can connect to the internet can gear up towards a new level of technology that can have much better benefits.
Brilliant. Last question then. If people want more information on Buffalo Grid and yourself, what must they do?
Well, our website, www.buffalogrid.com. Follow us on Twitter, mm-hmm. @BuffaloGrid. We're on Facebook as well, just as Buffalo Grid. Mm-hmm. and get in touch. I mean, we always looking for new partnerships, looking for new people to talk, looking for new insights. We're very proactive in getting in touch with the people and new groups.
Where does the name come from?
That's a good question. It doesn't come along very often. But, well, yeah, so again, Phil, my co-founder, gave us the Buffalo name. It was a Buffalo project at that stage.
Okay.
And it was because in Kenya, where he grew up, the buffaloes have the reputation of charging anything.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So we charge everything as well. That's the name.
What is the state of the social innovation scene in 2016 now?
Oh no, it's much better than it used to be. It's growing, and it's a very exciting place to be working. I mean, we're seeing lots of companies doing lots of very interesting things, and yeah, it's all happening.
Brilliant! Thank you very much for coming on the show today, Daniel.
Oh, you're very welcome, Neil.
Thank you. Have a great week and good luck with Buffalo Grid.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, buddy. Hello, Champel. Thanks for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Tell me a bit about 3 Million Club, please. Sounds interesting.
Okay, so the 3 Million Club is, put simply, is the Amazon.com of life-saving products. It came up because of the huge need of accountability and sustainability for life-saving products in the humanitarian sector. People are just have been frustrated. When you buy something or donate something to a charity, you really have no idea where your money is going through. And in most cases, unfortunately, neither does a charity. It goes to a bigger pot and then gets distributed on salaries, cars, rent, and some of it does maybe via life-saving product. And what we're doing is really we're integrating the efficiency and authenticity of e-commerce into the relief world.
Okay, cool.
What you buy is what they get.
Excellent. So this is, you're in it like a proper business, not like an NGO.
No, we are actually a complete non-for-profit, but with a for-profit model.
Okay.
So we're taking our investors, investors in previous angel investors in startups and technological startups and large businesses. They're interested in the hardcore for-profit model, and they believe in the efficiency, and so do I. However, our system is a not-for-profit system, so we're not interested in selling the system later. We're interested that people and agencies, especially local agencies as well as international agencies, will then adopt the tracking system to create efficiency and effectiveness over donations.
And where did the idea come from? Can you remember the discussion?
Oh, yes, I remember the discussion. for sure. Well, the idea came from, initially I was hired by these angels. I have over 17 years of experience in the humanitarian sphere, both in the field, living and working in post-natural disaster and conflict zones for a few years in every country, and then a lot of research experience in these fields. And what happened is that I developed a prior not-for-profit startup with other for-profit developers. I called this their Karma Projects. Because these are not-for-profit startups. So occasionally I catch a programmer, a very talented programmer, and I tell him that he needs to do something for greater good. What happened is that I was contacted by these angels because they were disillusioned by the whole, are disillusioned by the whole humanitarian relief, bottomless pit, donation sphere, and the lack of sustainability that it portrays. But they had no idea in how to make it more efficient. What they knew is that they want to integrate the tech of the 22nd century into the humanitarian sphere, the efficiency, the lean way the startup models work, into the humanitarian sphere, but they had no idea in how to do it in the sphere because they're not familiar. And that's where I came into the picture. And the actual idea of the e-commerce model and the tracking system came about a year ago. So we're now doing it a year. We're in existence for a little bit over 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So you've been doing it for 2 years. Can you share some stats? I mean, how many countries are you in? You know, how many communities are using this?
So right now we have been piloting in Haiti and post-earthquake Nepal. With what we have been doing, we have saved a little bit over 2,500 children using the same system. So what we really wanted to test, there was no questioning is that the product's actually life-saving. But what was the main question of this technology was, will it be utilizable? You know, will the agencies, the local agencies and the local manufacturers, will they like it and use it? Because, you know, there's so much technology in the third sector that is just left unused. Also in the for-profit sector, as you know. So it needs to be usable. And what we discovered is that the local agencies really loved using it and support it because they're empowered by it. Products go directly to them, not to international agencies. And the local manufacturers are empowered for them because they get business flow into their factories directly to them and not via larger international agencies.
Mm-hmm. So how do you go about finding the communities then?
So it goes, depending on the context, it's very flexible in how it works. And we want to keep it this way because our goal is the world, right? And we want to help wherever and support and send products, buy and send products wherever they're needed. So the system needs to be flexible enough to operate in different contexts. As you can imagine, working in Bihar in India compared to working in Sudan today would be very, very different story. So how we go about it is, we're heavily now investing in public media so that local NGOs and local manufacturers hear about this and know about this opportunity, that they can come and place their products on in our shop and use the tracking system.
So basically, if I donate to you and then everything gets tracked, is that correct?
So what you would do is that you don't actually donate to me. No. You go into the shop just like you would when you want to buy flowers for your girlfriend online. Mm-hmm. And you buy the product that you want to buy. Right now in our shop, you'll find one product, but within the next couple of weeks, it will be three. So it's growing fast. You will choose the product you want to buy, the life-saving product. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's the therapeutic food now online, or later it will be a water distribution mechanism. So you buy the product, and then immediately you will buy an actual physical product. You don't make a donation. Mm-hmm. You buy a gift. Once you bought that gift, you will get a message, thank you for your purchase. Just like how you would get it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Later on, when it was manufactured after days or a week, depending on the type of product, you get a notification that it was manufactured by a specific factory, and you will be notified which factory manufactured your product and that it's en route to a local distributor. Mm-hmm. And you will get to know which is that local distributor. So it's fully transparent on where it's going. You can actually go and visit the local distributor if you want to check the authenticity of the system. Once the product arrived to the local distributor, you'll see another tracking message in the tracking system saying it arrived and it's starting to be used and starting to save a life.
Okay.
That's the physical reporting, just like you would on DHL, moving until it reaches its destination. Mm-hmm. And then the final report that you will get is what we call an impact reporting. You will get a report, the story of the life, the life you helped save or saved. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get a little bit more pictures, maybe a video, also very lean report that touches more on the quality and not the actual physical location.
Excellent. So who's actually built the tracking device then?
The tracking device is now, we're working with a number of developers. So it's a number of developers and a number of contractors. Everything we do, because we have this startup model, we outsource. So all of our operations happen in-house, but then when we need additional services like programming, we outsource these depending on price offers and skill, really. So it's a combination of quality and price to keep it lean. Okay. As a non-profit.
Excellent. Any advice on outsourcing for our listeners? Any tricks or any tools?
On outsourcing?
Yeah. How have you found it?
Oh, wow. So outsourcing, it's a challenge. I mean, I think that when you're outsourcing things for non-profits, it's tricky because people are always cautious with you that you don't want to pay. You want everything to be free. And I think that one of the things is that to mention first, for very forefront, that we don't want freebies, because when you do get freebies, they're often very poor. and the commitment is very low for maintenance, especially with technological system development. So don't do freebies. That's my main advice for nonprofits that are outsourcing. And I guess also for for-profits that are outsourcing. But for for-profits, the main the thing that leads me is really the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So try and, you know, keep the good intentions, but keep it a very clear goal that you would apply for a for-profit business.
Excellent. What are you working on right now?
Right now, we're working on the 3 Million Club. So we're working on generating traction with buyers, getting as much people to our website to buy products, to buy life-saving products. Mm-hmm. That's, 50% of what we're doing. This is working in parallel to the system developing and the tracking device that we are developing. This is happening ongoingly. And then the second thing is to get more products on board in the shop. So, and actually we are working on India quite heavily. We want to get more products in India, more life-saving products manufactured in India and sell them. And distribute them within India in areas of need.
Mm-hmm. And when do you think that'll happen?
Very soon. So we have one product that is actually to do with malnutrition. India has the largest population of severely malnourished children in the world. Out of the 3.1 children that die every year, 1.5 are only in India. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the products that we want to launch there. There's a local manufacturer that is developing a therapeutic food, that has developed already therapeutic food, and we're looking at working with them. Mm-hmm. And then we're looking for more innovative products in India, and we're hoping to integrate them soon, to find them and integrate them soon. So if anybody has ideas, please get in touch with me. It's all very personal. You get in touch directly with me or with our operations officer, and we move on from then. Add these to the shop.
How big's the team?
Very small.
Two people. Okay.
Two people. You know, it's a little bit like a WhatsApp model. Mm-hmm. Very small team, very large operation. A lot of the services, most of the services are outsourcing. Of course, we do have a regular communication officer and IT support and CFO services. But again, these are outsourced. Mm-hmm. So on the actual payroll, there are two of us, and then the rest is outsourced.
Cool. And where does the name come from?
The name is going to change soon. Okay. If you have good ideas over the new name, please share them with us. We just couldn't come up with anything better. And we decided that rebranding is less of a priority at this moment. Mm-hmm. So we will probably do rebranding it within the next 6 months or so. The name came from our angels. They're not marketing people.
So you've been doing this for the last 17 years then?
Right. Okay. Yes.
Well, I mean, what's been the most surprising thing about the journey so far?
Oh, wow. The most surprising thing is the thing that got hold of me in the humanitarian sphere, you know, is when you have, I've been doing mainly relief aid, emergency relief aid, so it's post-natural disasters like tsunami, earthquakes, heat waves, epidemics, etc., and post-conflict. And entering these types of zones, the thing that most captured me is the humanity, not of the aid workers, but of the people. When you have absolutely nothing is when you see everything. You know, it's when you see the most humane magic. in our world. And it's it was incredible, you know, entering these places and people that have nothing, that everything was stripped off them, either by force of nature or by human cruelty, offer you the last cup of tea or a place to sit and sleep with them in whatever makeshift accommodation they have. That's the thing that captured me. And the capacity, the sheer capacity, our sheer capacity to bounce back after the worst is amazing, amazing, amazing to see. We often forget this capacity when we are in our life in the Northern Hemisphere and in the people that are privileged to have everything. How quick we can bounce up back and deal with hardship. And that capacity is what I'm really after on empowering and building, because the local capacity is greater than any international capacity. We just need to trust it and empower it and not defeated by creating dependency on foreign systems.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So, I mean, what do people like UNICEF and United Nations think of what you're doing?
A lot of friends and colleagues of mine think it's great because it fills a gap. It's not instead, it's not replacing what international agencies are doing. They're doing very, very important work that saves millions, hundreds of millions of lives all the time. And they're also doing development work. But what they don't do and what is difficult for them is to do rapid change in their systems. And it's difficult for them to aid the local individual needs, very, very micro needs on the ground and very micro needs of individual donors just wanting to help and donate online. People that just want to do good now. I want to buy a life-saving product now. This is very difficult for huge organizations to do at the moment. So they think that this system really fills a much necessary, much needed gap that exists today in supporting local economy and providing full transparent tracking. Mm-hmm. And if once the system, the public engages and the system is up and running, there will be no question for them over the need for them to use similar systems.
Excellent. Last few questions then. Say if someone wants to do like a tech for good startup, similar to yours, what advice would you give them?
Depends where they come from. So if they come, your question is if they come from the technological background, right? Mm-hmm. Then I would say the main thing is to collaborate with somebody that knows the actual sphere that you're going to work with. So a humanitarian like myself or like many others. The reason for that is that we all have great ideas, but if you don't know the actual problem that you are solving and the actual questions, you need to have a good question, a good problem, not a big impossible problem to answer. You need to have to understand the domain that your system is going to be used in and what need it's going to answer. That's my main issue, because a lot of things that seem for us obvious in the humanitarian sphere are not at all obvious. Talking from power, capacity, electricity, until skill and know-how and funds, if your product is more expensive than the weekly earnings of an individual, it might be an issue, and many more questions. So the first thing is to partner with somebody that that understands the sphere and understands the problem in the domain that you want to aid.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and plans for the future, say, what would you say the goals are in the next 12 months?
In the next 12 months, the really is to get more products on board in the shop and to get more buyers to know of the system and to buy and donate and buy actual products and get them sent. And this is in parallel to developing the technology. That's our main goal. Develop the technology, add more products, and get people to buy the products and send them to where is needed. So create a lot of traction within the shop. Mm-hmm. After that, 24 months goals down the road is to get the system and give the same tracking system to other agencies that have similar online shops so that they can provide the same tracking, the same local empowerment as we do, and to see that it actually works and creates engagement and sustainable solutions.
Hello, Vidya. Thanks for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Yeah, thank you, Neil.
Excellent. Tell me a bit about yourself and what you're building, please.
Yes, Evaya Desk is my company name. It's a startup. It's customer support ticketing software. But the beauty of this software is it's a plug-and-play software for small and medium businesses. So wherever you want, right, you just can integrate on top of any business. So it works on mobile and web applications both. So in minutes, you can integrate, and customer support can be right available from the business application.
Excellent. I mean, can you remember how it got started?
I started a year back, and then, started developing the product. Got many requirements, collecting of requirements, evaluating them. And then, I built it by myself, the product. And, now it is ready.
Okay. And how's it going so far? Can you share some stats? I mean, how many companies have signed up? Are you making sales, etc.?
Yeah. Around 30 companies have signed up to the product. For now, I'm giving it for free because I should get valuable feedback from the customers and then strengthen my product and should add a lot of value and it should be rich, right? So I just gave it for free for now.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And what kind of feedback have you got then?
I got some simple feedbacks like, this feature will do great for me, and someone wanted that feature. I mean, two, three features were there, which I also felt, they're beautiful, and then I added them.
Excellent. How big's the team?
Yeah, it's four right now.
What do you do then? Do you just develop the website yourself, or do you do like sales, marketing, business development?
I'm doing everything right now. I slowly started hiring people for various activities.
Okay. And how are you finding that process of hiring people?
Hiring people, it's a little tough, but it's not impossible to us. So, it is a little tough in the sense that, when I try to hire over-experienced people, their expectations will be very high. And I cannot satisfy them. So I'm just going with freshers and less experienced persons, and then taking them on board and then training them.
Okay. And what's it like being the founder of a startup now that you're managing staff?
No, right now I'm doing marketing. I'm learning a lot many things in marketing because that's something new to me. I come from tech background, so I worked in technology field for more than 15 years and then started doing this one. So I know a little bit, but still that is not sufficient, and I'm huge learning is there now, right now for me.
How big is the market?
Market is very huge. Market is there, available, very huge, and even competition is there. It all depends on how much it's like. SMB business, if I take around more than 6 billion businesses are there according to a Forbes study in 2015. So it's huge.
Excellent. So you're just targeting Indian businesses then, or will you be targeting overseas businesses?
Yeah, overseas businesses as well. Yeah, my software is a SaaS platform, so I don't want to limit myself to India.
Okay, and will you be targeting certain industries, or will you be targeting like all industries?
I have selected a few industries. I just want to start with that. I want to expand after that.
And in terms of the website, what are you actually working on right now?
Okay, website is, it's done actually. Everything, the product is ready.
Excellent. So your background is a tech background, is that right?
Yeah, I'm from tech background, yeah.
Okay, so you're working 9 to 5. I mean, what made you want to do your own startup?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. after having 15 years, the learning in the enterprise when you're working is limited, actually. You will be tied up to the roles and the tasks which are assigned the goals. The vision will be very less, actually. And when your aspiration is and your vision is too huge, you just cannot satisfy yourself being in the job for more time. Mm-hmm. So I just have decided that, that's not the place wherein I can go on for long. This is my my way of working and my aspiration to do this one where my passion is there. So I just, and then this idea was there since a long time. So I, because I don't have business background, I just went and did a certification in IIMB before I just start this one. And then, yeah, after that, yeah, I'm all done, set to do that, this.
So, what did your friends and family think when you decided to do this startup?
They are all enthused so much, encouraging me. And then they're just seeing how I will I succeed. And then they're planning to come and join me once it goes to the next level, right?
Excellent. Is this your first startup then?
Yeah, this is my first startup.
Okay. What advice would you give to people doing their first startups?
You just have to start. There is no best time. It will not come. Actually, we have to decide and then start.
Okay, cool. And what's the most surprising, thing about your journey so far?
Surprising thing. Yeah, it is. It's not a surprise for me because I wanted to do this since long time, and might be surprised to others.
Okay, cool. And how big do you want to go with this startup?
Yeah, the dreams are big. I just started, so I at least want to take my EVR desk to 1 million customers.
Okay, and say in the next year, say in 12 months' time, what would you say, how many customers would you think you're going to get?
Yeah, I'm targeting to get at least 1,000 customers in next year.
Okay, cool. And how would you get those customers? Is it online, offline, digital marketing, SEO, sale, face-to-face?
Yeah, I started digital marketing under digital marketing, SEO, content marketing, everything. So I have the strategy in front of me and then I'm just executing that.
Okay, cool. So is there any sort of marketing channel that works best for you at the moment, or are you still testing things?
In digital marketing itself, I have tested few types of digital marketing, which one will work out for me. And then now I'm set to go ahead with the content marketing, which is very much suitable for my industry, right?
Okay, cool. You said you have got a coding background. What's the stack that the app's built on?
Yeah, I have used LaMStack.
Okay, cool. And just for those people who don't know what that is, just explain it to them.
Okay, but the technology which I have used?
Yeah.
Okay, I have used the LaMStack to building up the EVR desk, which is basically the PHP code base along with the REST APIs, a little bit of HTML, CSS to build the front end part of it also.
Okay, so did you learn to code yourself
I did, yeah. And my sisters also helped me. They're all in technical field, so they have helped. Their hand is there in developing, right? Okay. We are four sisters and then all four in technical field. So, yeah, that's where my strength lies.
Okay, cool. And so do you have any advice for anyone wanting to learn to code? Where do they start?
Yes, yeah. There is nothing that we cannot learn. So, we can just start coding it and then you will learn, actually. Okay. There is nothing anyone cannot learn in this world.
Okay, I'm just going to ask you some quick-fire questions. Are you a tea drinker or a coffee drinker?
I don't drink tea and coffee.
Okay. Are you a morning person or a night person?
I'm an early bird, so I wake up in the early morning.
What picture do you have on your smartphone home screen?
Oh, it's Kashi Vishwanath's screen.
Okay. What do you do on a Sundays, apart from talking to me?
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of family day, Sunday. So we plan, we cook, we eat together, and then we celebrate every Sunday like that.
Okay. What is your idea of food heaven? What would you like to eat?
Okay. It's South Indian food, rice items. I like all rice items.
Okay. And what is your idea of food hell? What don't you like to eat?
I'm a vegetarian. I think there's too many to say that I don't eat. So I basically in vegetarian, everything else I try to eat. I don't have anything. Yeah.
So what would you say is the vision of the company then?
Yeah, our vision is, it's there clearly mentioned on our web page, but it's empowering small and medium businesses with the SaaS applications.
Okay.
This is my first application, I would say. It's a ticketing software is my first application, so which can get integrated with any business. So in the same lines, I will come up. I have set up products lined up. I will keep developing them.
What excites you most about this startup?
Okay, I mean, everything actually is an excitement here, because it's my first startup. Starting from the cloud coding requirements collection, everything was exciting for me. Selecting the technology, which one to use, right? From that time, what marketing strategy should I use? I mean, every stage of my startup is an excitement for me.
So you're an entrepreneur. Do you think anyone can be an entrepreneur?
Yes. Anyone, I mean, everyone is an entrepreneur if you see in one or the other way. We might not term that as an entrepreneur. But anyone, if you have the vision and the passion and the hard work, right, you can build big businesses also.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And who are your heroes?
Okay, it's my mom.
Okay. Why is that?
Yeah, because she has been with us and then empowering us and motivating every day to day. She didn't allow us to any day, feel down or any sort of negative feeling. She did not allow to come even touch us. It's difficult, right, for daughters to make them all engineers. Yes, a lot of control as well.
Okay. Ivaya Desk, what does that mean? What does the name come from?
Ivaya means very fast, and I wanted to give customer service in a faster way. And they can integrate also in faster way. Everything is fast. So I just thought, this is the best name for my company.
Excellent. Last two questions. Do you have any favorite books or favorite blogs you like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I'm the techie guy, but I would suggest all technical books. One book is Toyota Way, the Toyota Way field book. That is very good, actually. Anyone can read that one. And it actually gives the process from process per se, how good it should be, right? Any organization, yeah.
My name is Deepak Goyal, and I'm the founder and CEO of Karma Circles. And what Karma Circles is, it's a peer-to-peer knowledge sharing platform where professionals can come and seek advice from anybody else on the platform. And the only expectation is that if somebody gives you time to talk and understand your problem and give you advice, then you are supposed to write a thank you note for that person. It's as simple as that. It's free for both the advice giver and receiver. The receiver gets free help and free advice. And the giver actually builds their reputation because the thank you note goes on to their public profile and people come to know that they were kind to somebody else.
So can you give me some examples of advice?
Sure. So, there are multiple scenarios in which this platform is being used. Suppose there is a student in India or suppose there is a working professional in India who wants to apply for Harvard Business School. And we have a good 20-30 people group on Karma Circles wherein the members are either Harvard Business School students or their alums. So these people from India will reach out to them asking for advice on what it takes to get into Harvard, how do they strengthen their applications, even if they want to apply in 1 year from now, and then how can they actually do well when they are in the program. So that is one use case. Another use case is startup entrepreneurs can actually reach out to advisors who have built multiple companies before, and they will actually give them advice and tell them, okay, this is how you refine your marketing strategy, this is how you define your sales strategy. Then there are people who are also reaching out to lawyers on the platform to seek legal advice. Mm-hmm. And another use case is there is another use case wherein people are reaching out to others if they actually are applying for a specific company or if they are moving from one geography to another. So if you are in East Coast in the US, mm-hmm, and you are moving to the West Coast, mm-hmm, the way you search for a job is different in West Coast compared to the East Coast. So you can reach out to people in California. Suppose you are in New York Can you reach out to them and say that, you know, hey, okay, I'm looking to, you know, search for a job in the startup ecosystem. How do I do that? So all these calls happen on Skype, phone, or in person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like they end some, take somewhere between 30 minutes to 1 hour. It all depends on the giver, how much time they want to give.
Excellent. So how did you get the idea? What was the conversation that got it started?
I have been doing mentoring for almost a decade now. But over the last 6 years, I have been very, very aggressive. I have done almost more than 1,000 one-on-one conversations with people around the world. I have been a mentor with 500 startups, which is almost like the number two accelerator program in the US. And I have also been mentoring a lot of students from Booth, Kellogg, High School of Business, which is where I went to school. And then there were a lot of people from India who were reaching out to me and asking me help on how to get into top business schools in Europe. And then, you know, over the last 6 years, I have been advising a lot of people in the startup ecosystem, because I have been in that ecosystem the last 7 years now.
Can you please share some stats? I mean, how many people are using the platform at the moment? How many signups are you getting, et cetera, et cetera?
We have more than 5,000 people on the platform. And we have more than 1,000 meeting requests that have been sent on the platform. And our acceptance rate on our platform is somewhere between 70 to 75%. And almost 800, 900 thank you notes have been shared so far, which happens after the meeting is over.
Actually, I mean, is that what you expected when you first came up with the idea?
Yeah, so we have been growing steadily and slowly. And when we started almost 1.5 years back, we started with a website. But we realized that website was not appropriate for scheduling time, and it was not appropriate, and it was not easy for people to use. Mm-hmm. So we actually focused on mobile apps, and we launched the Android app in January, and we launched the iPhone app in May this year. So, you know, we are practically around for only like, you know, around 6 months, because, you know, mobile apps is what makes the whole platform so easy to use. So in terms of the traction so far, I would say that we are very, very happy with the acceptance rates. Mm-hmm. I'm probably not happy with the number of users so far, but the bar is also extremely high to get onto this platform, wherein everybody has to be on LinkedIn to sign up for this product.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how big do you want to go with this then?
We eventually want to go as big as LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Because we believe that every professional in this world can take some help from someone else and can give some help to others. So everyone, you know, so we really believe that in about 5 years from now, we could be like, you know, in hundreds of millions of people, because they are professionals, because everybody can give some help, everybody can receive some help. And we have created non-monetary incentives for people to help others. And you will, when you use the app yourself, you will notice that how easy it is to say no to somebody, how easy it is to schedule time with somebody, how easy it is to write a thank you note. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it is much easier than anything else out there in the whole world.
Excellent. So what would you say is like the hardest part about building this business? You know, what takes up most of your time?
So I think most of our time is like, you know, because we have made a conscious choice that we will never do paid marketing, because we believe that our product and our offering is so superior, and, you know, it's completely free of cost for everybody. So we are not, you know, not spending even a dollar in marketing. So that is the reason why, you know, word of mouth marketing takes time. But I think we are on a good track, wherein people who are using the product are spreading the word for us.
Excellent.
So if we were to put in some money, we would have gone much faster. We're like, you know, hey, we could have done some Google ads, we could have done some Facebook ads, but we are like, you know, no, we want to grow organically, like WhatsApp, like Amazon, like LinkedIn, like Facebook. We're like, you know, we truly want to rely on the power of the product.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And how big is the team, and where is it based?
So most of us are based in India right now. We are like 5 people full time and 2 people part time. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
You can see that, you know, we are very lean team. We have an Android app, we have an iPhone app, and we have a, you know, functioning website as well. So we're just like 5 people engineering team. We are able to manage that, and we have been keeping the cost of running the company extremely low. That is why we have been able to give it away for free. Okay. And we believe that we can do that for good 1-2 more years.
What excites you most about this startup then?
I think, Neil, the biggest thing about this company is that this is my life's calling.
Okay.
You know, I have been working on this idea for almost 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have three passions in my life. Mm-hmm. One is, you know, I have been like very, very passionate about social networks for mm-hmm. almost a decade now. I wrote several papers on social networks back in 2002, 2003 when LinkedIn and Facebook didn't even exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have a couple of patents on social networks. So that is my first passion in life.
Mm-hmm.
My second passion in life is mentoring people. As I said, you know, over the last 6 years, I've mentored more than 1,000 people, and over my career, I've mentored more than 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, you know, that is the second thing. The third thing is, I have built products which are so simple to use
mm-hmm.
and which are being used by hundreds of millions of people today.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like, you know, how do you bring all of these things together and mm-hmm. create a product which will be used for micro-mentoring by millions of people and you build a very, very meaningful social network out of those interactions.
Let's talk about you and your background then. You said you mentored over 1,000 people, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I mean, what's like the main question they always ask you?
So I will tell you that, you know, I'll take a little digression and tell you about my background.
Yeah.
So I grew up in India, went to IIT Delhi, did my conscience from there. And then Microsoft hired me and Microsoft placed me as an engineer in Silicon Valley. And, you know, from 2001 to 2005, I was an engineer at Microsoft. And then I decided to go for an MBA.
Mm-hmm.
At UC Berkeley, and I specialize in entrepreneurship. And I also moved into product management starting around that time period. And since then, I have been in the startup space. I first, you know, I was part of a startup called coupons.com. Then I was a director of product management and built three of their most amazing products.
Mm-hmm.
Then I moved to India for a year to run a company in real estate. I was a chief product officer, ran engineering, product management, and marketing for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to Chicago. And in Chicago, I ran an education company. I was the CTO of the company and the co-founder. And I ran engineering, marketing, and product for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can imagine that, you know, I have touched so many domains. I have touched so many functions. I'm not somebody who is like a 21-year-old CEO. I'm somebody who has grown up the ladder. You know, I have been a junior person. I've been a manager. I've been a director. I've been a VP level. I've been a CXO level. So what that does is that makes me very, very useful for people literally across the board. Like, you know, even if, you know, somebody is like a 60-year-old CEO of an energy company or somebody who is like a 18-year student of, say, law,
mm-hmm.
I believe that they can learn something from me at least for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, they can decide if they want to have follow-up meetings or not.
Mm-hmm.
So what I really help people with is how to move from engineering to product management, because that is what I accomplished in my career. How do you get into a top 10 business school when you are like, you know, trying to apply? How do you become a great product manager?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, for the entrepreneurs, it has been like how to raise funds,
mm-hmm.
how to scale up your company. I scaled up companies from 0 to 1 million, 2 to 12 million, 17 to 100 million.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a very diverse experience that I can be useful for a lot of people, like, you know, be it people in business school,
mm-hmm.
people who are trying to go to business school, people who are in engineering. So, yeah, so, you know, that is what I typically help people with. Like, you know, people will come with the pitch decks on, you know, is this pitch deck fundamental?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, you know, what do you think about our idea? What do you think about a sales strategy?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about a marketing strategy?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have a few listeners who may be pitching in front of a few VCs. Obviously, you've got a lot of experience. Any advice on how to pitch to a VC?
So, you know, I have been an angel investor myself, and whenever an entrepreneur comes to me, I ask them four questions before I even look at their pitch deck. And the first question that I ask them is, what is the problem they're trying to solve?
Mm-hmm.
The second question I ask them is, how is that problem being solved today?
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that every problem that is getting solved by them must be getting solved somehow. Maybe there is a really poor solution to solve that problem.
Mm-hmm.
The third question that I ask them is, what is their solution and how is that solution superior
mm-hmm.
to anything out there?
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth and the most important question is, can we that people will actually use their solution
mm-hmm.
over any of the existing solutions
mm-hmm.
because it is significantly superior to anything out there.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get into that, That is when I ask that question, like, you know, why are you doing this? Why is it that you believe you are the best person in this world to do this? And how big is the market? And how much money do they need? And other important questions.
Okay, excellent. And in terms of the actual slide deck itself, I mean, how would you go about putting together a slide deck? Obviously, we have, like, death by PowerPoint presentations. You must have seen so many PowerPoint presentations. How would you get a PowerPoint to stand out?
Yes, there is. So I think that, you know, the best slide decks are the ones which actually answer literally six questions for me. The four I just told you, and the fifth one is why are we the right people to solve this problem? Mm-hmm. And the sixth thing is, like, you know, how big is the market and what have we achieved so far?
Excellent. I mean,
I also have a sample slide deck that I've put together on SlideShare that people can download and they can see.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Cool. Good stuff. So what are your favorite startups then over the last 10 years?
Over the last 10 years, my favorite startup, I will tell you that the best company that I, you know, I was in the Valley in 2001 when Google was just getting started and they got started a couple of hundred meters from me.
Yep.
And so Google is my number one company. I still believe that they have the agility of a startup and the processes of a company. Mm-hmm. And then I really, really love and get inspiration from what you serve 400, 500 million people with, like, less than $50 million and with a less than a 50 people company. And that is what we draw inspiration from all the time. Mm-hmm. I really love Trello. Because I think Trello is an amazing product as well and an amazing company. Mm-hmm. And the other startups that I really like, I think Facebook goes without saying. And these are, like, some of my best startups.
Okay. What's the one thing you want people to know about building a startup?
I would say that, you know, we don't forever, so go build something that will actually outlive you.
Hello, Vivek. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Hi, Neil. Hi. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Brilliant. Tell me a little about yourself and what you're doing, please. Sounds interesting.
Oh, so Neil, we are based out of India, and we are trying to develop a complete ecosystem using technology to facilitate deep financial inclusion, financial penetration in our country. Mm-hmm. As you know that India is one of the strong growing economy with very strong growth in the middle class population. The need of understanding of financial inclusion in two sense, through financial literacy and through financial knowledge distribution. Mm-hmm. We are trying to integrate a strong technology orientation into a distribution of financial knowledge in society. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is happening through a learning management system. That is happening through the analytic platform which we have developed, mm-hmm. where people get access to various data and data visualization tools, mm-hmm. so that they can easily comprehend what's going on in the financial markets.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So is this like a learning platform for people who want to get into finance, would you say?
That's right. Okay. That's right. So in a very simple form, it's a simple learning platform where people who are interested in finance and financial markets, mm-hmm. they can plug themselves into it. Mm-hmm. But apart from a basic learning platform, what we have done is we have integrated a lot of interactive learning tools, and we are kind of creating a gamification framework, mm-hmm. where people actually learn by practicing, by playing the game, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and by keeping track of the market through various live market tools as well.
So who is this actually for then? Is it for people who want to get a job in the financial industry, or is it be for students or working professionals or, you know, families, etc.?
Yeah, so Neil, if you see the age bracket, which is very, very vibrant right now in India, that is the age bracket from age 18 to 36. Mm-hmm. That's why we call India to be the youngest country in terms of the manpower which is coming into our system. So the target is to cover up that complete age bracket. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right after high school, whenever a student gets into the graduation mode, immediately a need of value-added program like ours come into picture, because the traditional academic programs like BCom and BBA, etc., they have become kind of a need program rather than a value-added career programs. Mm-hmm. So a program like us, which caters to an age bracket, right from age bracket 18, which is more of job-oriented and career-oriented. But as you progress and you get into a job, and once you start earning salary and make money from the job, your need of investing that money to generate more money out of that money comes into center stage. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's not just about career program, but it's also about a lot of programs which is helping people to manage their funds properly mm-hmm. and generate more return out of their existing funds.
Excellent. Can you share some stats then? How's it going so far? I mean, how many people have signed up and gone through the program?
Okay, so we have been running this offline academy since 2008, and we must have trained almost 10,000 people directly and indirectly into financial markets. We launched the online portal called elearnmarkets.com, which is purely an online delivery, and whatever philosophy or practical orientation we had in offline, we've converted that to a lot of interactive tools online. Now, in that, in last 1 year of existence, we have trained more than 1,000 people from across geographies. Mm-hmm. India obviously has internet penetration goes strong, the broadband connections goes better in India, and the mobile commerce is picking up like anything in India. There is a lot of interest of students as well as market participants to get knowledge online. Mm-hmm. Now, this 1,000 in last 1 year has been extremely encouraging, because what we did in last 7 years, literally, we have, in terms of top line, literally we have done that in last 1 year. So the number is quite exciting, and we have also launched our analytic platform called Stockage mm-hmm. for Indian market. Now that platform gives students and other people the access of market data and gives a lot of visualization, a lot of output-driven analytics. That is also helping us to attach with a lot of new people in the system. Mm-hmm. Like almost 25,000 users have downloaded our app Stockage, which is an extremely lucid and high-end data analytic tool for stock markets. So all these 25,000 guys, eventually they will need support from us in terms of knowledge upgradation, in terms of hand-holding to understand these data points. Mm-hmm. So I see a huge number for both of our tools, for Elearn Markets as well as for Stockage in coming 1 year.
Excellent. I mean, how big do you want to go with this then? Obviously, this is for the Indian market. Any plans for overseas markets?
So we will be definitely going to the next level by catering to Asia-Pac region. Because I think that region is still underserved in terms of financial education. I think India is definitely one of the top three countries in Asia-Pac region in terms of financial market penetration. But we have started offering our services to a country like Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. And we are talking to someone in Thailand, we are talking to someone in Sri Lanka, mm-hmm. and we are also focusing on building regional contents. So I am here in the eastern part of India, and I am here in a state called West Bengal, where, mm-hmm. where a very strong base of Bengali population is here. Now we are developing a lot of content in local language, in Bengali language. We have developed a lot of content in Gujarati, a lot of content in Telugu. So the idea is to, as we move to other geographies, our strength on creating content on regional language has to be improved. Because English is definitely followed, but the moment I add the local language as part of English, for example, Hinglish, mm-hmm. now the content which we are developing in India for our Hindi audience is more of English. You know, training people on derivatives in pure Hindi may become a challenge, but the moment I see that this derivative is derivative in English or Hindi, whatever, but conceptually I can train them derivatives in Hindi, that will be more value addition which we are bringing in society rather than, you know, purely English-based training.
Excellent. Let's talk about you then. I mean, what's your background and how did you come up with this idea?
So, Neil, I am actually a chartered accountant and company secretary, and I did my MBA from IIM Indore.
Okay.
Now, obviously, an MBA gives a very, very holistic perspective of how to do a business. And while I was, you know, doing my graduation, I realized that there is no institute who is focused on helping poor mortals like us to learn about financial markets. Mm-hmm. And financial markets, economic affairs, current affairs, you know, these are extremely basic things which everyone should be updated. Mm-hmm. Not just because you want to invest or you trade, but also because if you know financial economics, you can plan your business or your career much better. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, the cycles, the bubbles, the existence of finance in your life is always there perpetually. So there were no specific institute which used to help us to do that. So I started this academy in 2008 as an offline academy. We did a lot of work in the offline, in tier 2, tier 3 cities in India, where we used to provide free education to people on learning about a basic concept like compound interest, basic concept like the risk return profile. People in India, they don't understand the risk associated with things like chit fund. And they invest their hard-earned money in those funds, eventually looking at the funds, eventually taking away the money from them. So India is highly deficient in terms of right financial education. And in last 7 years of our existence, I think we have done a pretty good job in making people aware about the risk associated with various financial products.
So what were the early days like? I mean, were you making money from day one? I mean, or did it take like 6 weeks to get it going? What was the journey?
Education is always a challenging business in terms of generating a positive cash flow for initial years. Because ultimately what you create in initial years is a brand, which is an intangible. So it took us a lot of time, and especially when you are into a niche product where you are literally creating a market. So we never copy-paste anyone, because financial education in 2008 was never something which people were keen on as a business. So this is a market we literally created. So initial few years was obviously tough. I have to invest a lot of my money as well as my time, because time is also money, right? So the ROI from the business was not good. But as my base is there, now using the technology, I can see a multiplier effect in the business growth. And this is how we are making money, and we intend to make a lot of money from this exercise.
Excellent. So you've been doing it for 7 years. Can you remember like the breakthrough moment then that you knew this, you know, this was going to work?
So that happened actually in 2014. And that is when we thought that now we have to expand, because we can't be restricting ourselves to one location. And we thought that the best way to do that is virtual world. And we created this website, elearnmarkets.com. And the first 2 months were so encouraging. And we were able to convince the organizations like National Stock Exchange, Bombay Stock Exchange, Multi Commodity Exchange. And we became their partner for e-learning in financial markets. That's where we realized that this is something which we have done pretty nice. And if the organizations like those are convinced that they are becoming partner with us, and we got good sales in the initial first quarter. So that's, I would say, that it's a breaking moment for us.
Excellent. So are you a first time founder then? Is this your first shot at building the company?
No, Neil, if you see, business or entrepreneurship is in our blood. So, maybe this is, I would not say that this is a first time entrepreneurship or a first time venture which I have undertaken. During the college days, during the school days, we were involved in a pretty business ventures. My family is from a business background, so that also adds on to the risk taking ability inside me. So this business venture has been kind of an added venture to my other ventures. So I would not say that it's a standalone venture. Because I had other ventures which was giving me cash flow, I was able to sustain my livelihood in this venture. Because for any entrepreneur, it's extremely important that you have some cash flow from somewhere up and running. Otherwise, you will get break in 6 months or 8 months.
How big is your team now?
So I have three ventures. One is a pure technology-enabled financial market trading venture. There we have around 50 people. My academy and financial education business has around 30 people. And the technology piece, which I've latest developed, that has around 12 people right now. So that is the businesses where directly I'm involved. But apart from that, there are other family business which we have. There we have around 150 people. But there we have collaborative work of various family members involved. So I'm not including that as part of my work.
So you've got three or four ventures. I mean, how do you keep on top of things then? How do you prioritize things?
Yeah, so as I was telling you, that I think one of the biggest strengths which I carry is to identify the right partner for each businesses. And I've been blessed to get good partners for each business. For education, we have a partner called Vineet. For e-learning, we have again Vineet, who's taking the lead. For tech piece, we have a partner called Vinay. So all these guys are old guards who have been with me. And I've been able to convince them to become part
of this new venture, and they have done pretty good for, and both of us have done pretty good for each other. Mm-hmm. So basically, partners drive the business. My role is obviously to be involved in the business. Apart from that, I give a good vision to this whole working. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, we develop good team of L2, L3s who execute the business properly. Mm-hmm. So people management is something which fortunately I've been able to do properly in my life.
Okay, let's talk about that then. Any tips then for people listening who want to recruit people?
I think first you need to understand who you are. What is your aptitude? Mm. And you will only gel with your wavelength. It only will match with someone who is exactly in line to your aptitude. Mm. So if I, like for example, I'm a moderate person. I'm a conservative person.
Mm. You're an accountant, right? So that makes sense.
Right. So I need to get on long only with people who have similar kind of a mindset. So I had my bit of failures as well in terms of people identifying the right people, because at times I had recruited or I worked with some very aggressive people. Mm-hmm. But I eventually seen that they will always think about themselves, and I will not make money out of that association. So it's always essential to work with people with whom your mindset will work, mm-hmm. which is typically the nature, your nature will be exactly in alignment to their nature.
Excellent. Okay. You mentioned vision before. What's the overall vision of the company?
My overall vision is use technology to the core of every activity. Not that I don't like people working in my organization, but everyone should have technology as a base of their working. And simple problems in our society that can be solved using technology. If we can channelize that, there is enough business potential available, which should always be in alignment to giving back to society. Mm-hmm. So we can anytime do a business of various not solicited businesses or vice businesses, but they don't add value to the society. And because fortunately we are well qualified, we have so much of education as our backing, society has given us so much. If we give back to society using technology and solve common problems, there is enough opportunity in the world, not just in India.
Excellent. What would you say is the highlight of your career so far?
The highlight of the career has been that every 3 years, I've been able to create a scalable business for myself. Mm-hmm. This is about, you know, I was doing this a couple of days ago. I was doing this mathematics where I was seeing that what has happened to my business, my career since 1999 when I graduated from my commerce degree. Mm-hmm. I saw that, you know, every 3 years I've been able to create a sustainable long-term business for myself, and I moved on to create another one after that.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So maybe I'm quite restless in creating new businesses. That can be one of the thing. Mm-hmm. Or I've been able to solicit good talent who has kind of taken up a business and grown with me and then carried over the business together. Mm-hmm.
What would you say is the most surprising thing about your entrepreneurial journey so far?
There have been surprises on the failure side. Mm-hmm. But on the success side, I don't think so. I'm surprised because what I've started with a vision that has always worked with that vision. Mm-hmm. On the failure side, there have been a lot of surprises. Mm-hmm. But on the success side, because, you know, when I started Academy in 2008, the objective was to give back to society, to spread knowledge. Mm-hmm. The money making was never the objective. Mm-hmm. So we became a decent brand with that objective. But in 2010, when Vineet joined, the objective was to make money also. Mm-hmm. And we were able to make money and redeploy that money in our business. So I think there were no surprises per se on the success side.
Mm-hmm. Give me an example of the failure then. You said some of the surprising things have happened when you failed. Just any stories?
So there have been a couple of associations with people and I have gone into joint ventures with them. So I think surprises was more in terms of HR management and also in terms of regulatory scenario in our country. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there have been surprises when suddenly government has become kind of aggressive in something, or they've changed their stance. There was kind of an aback or surprise element that why can't we see a consistency in the way our government is thinking? Why suddenly after 3-4 years of working, we realize that, oh, this is not the government is intending to do, there's something else which is there in their mind, and your business structure actually suffers because of that change in the intention.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
So that's more external, I would say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Internally, I don't think so. There has been, internally, I would say it's more of personality surprises, mm-hmm. that as a personality, you keep on changing every 4 years, 5 years because of your family orientation, because of your maturity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that has added to the surprise. And now I'm much, much cooler and calm person, mm-hmm. than what I was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe age and maybe family orientation has changed as well. Mm-hmm. So that is giving me surprises.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Last few questions then. In the next year, what would you say the critical big milestones that you need to achieve?
By next year, we have a target of connecting to 1 lakh financial market enthusiasts in our country.
Mm-hmm.
People who are looking at the markets, who believe that financial market is the place which will help them to create wealth for themselves. So my target for till next year is, if we can touch those 1 lakh people and add value to them, either through education or through analytics, I think we will be set for becoming the next one of the top 3 financial market ecosystem provider in our country.
Brilliant. What advice would you give to startups about growing and marketing a startup?
The biggest advice is save money, because spending money is a very luring, is very comfortable thing to do,
mm-hmm.
because the tendency to spend extra is always there, right?
Mm-hmm.
We love to spend, right?
Yeah.
So it's very important for a startup to save money and have ROI for each and every money spent. So if you have spent 1 lakh rupee or 50,000 rupee for any exercise, it can be marketing, it can be recruitment or whatever,
mm-hmm.
there has to be clearly defined return on investment of that money spent.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Any startup, I think the biggest challenge of startup today is there are too many people ready to fund a startup.
Okay.
So we should actually be careful of taking money from anyone and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And a communication has to be clearly given to the investor that, listen, I'm not going to spend money the way you want it to be, or I'm going to be a spendthrift, but I'm not going to compromise on growth as well.
Mm-hmm. Who are your business heroes? Or heroes in general?
See, I love to read about the guys who are from my community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm basically from a Marwadi community.
Mm-hmm.
So I love to read about these heroes and how they have created a fantastic business enterprise during the time when India was actually going through tough times.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the Birlas, the Tatas, not Tatas, obviously, they're not from my community, but the Birlas,
mm-hmm.
the new generation businessmen who are from my community, especially the guys who are doing phenomenal on the tech side,
mm-hmm.
all the Bansals which are ruling the country right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there is no tagging of a community with a business model, right?
Mm-hmm.
That on a tech side, only South Indians can do good. On the real business side, the North Indians do a better. Fortunately, I'm seeing that tagging is getting untagged in India now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very impressed with the way technology business are getting oriented, with a lot of people from my community mm-hmm. becoming heroes in those businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So those are guys, I read a lot about them and I get encouraged. And obviously when we talk about tech, US is a place where you get a lot of new generation tech ideas getting originated. So good inspiration from them as well. But I prefer to stay in-house mm-hmm. and know more about the success story of India mm-hmm. rather than going outbound.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Yeah? Last few questions. What are your hobbies and interests outside work? Obviously you're really busy, but is there anything you like to do?
Yeah, so I read a lot. I like technology a lot. I adapt to all latest technology gadgets,
mm-hmm.
so which actually keeps me busy, which is good as well as bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of a family person, so I'm blessed with three children.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to allocate a lot of my time to them and their activities, their sports, their studies, etc. So I'm a kind of a family guy.
Mm-hmm.
That that is the end of the show. If you'd like to, please leave a rating and review of the show. Search for the Indian Startup Show on iTunes, Stitcher. We are now on Spotify. So if you're building something exciting, please send me an email, hello at neilpatel.co, or tweet at Indian Startup SH. We can go to facebook.com/Indian Startup Show to connect. If you want to create your own podcast, check out my class, Getting Your Podcast Off the Ground. Check out the show notes and get Skillshare Premium free for 2 months. Thank you and goodbye.